Thank you for coming, attending this very emotional event, I think it will be today. Before I begin, I would like to thank a few people for making this possible. They would include Katrin Klingon and Cordula Hamschmidt for the invitation to the conference, Ansel Franke for the exhibition, and Ansha Amen for making all of this possible. So, in the short period, in the 20 or so minutes I have for this tribute, which is essentially what this is, I want to take very seriously the proposal of thinking with Faroqi, around which I've been asked to structure my comments and my reflections this morning, this early afternoon. Haroon and I often spoke together about architecture. He loved architecture, and he revealed to me that from a very early age, he used to contemplate buildings for extended periods of time, staring at them, as he said, staring at buildings until they began to move. He was fascinated by the details of buildings, not just architectural elements such as cornices and moldings and keystones and all kinds of useless ornamentation that he delighted in referring to as culture, but also by their function, the machine-like way in which buildings structure and regulate the flows of social life that takes place within and around them. Buildings are apparatuses that construct subject positions, that absorb differences into an overarching whole. And I have great memories of forays with Haroon into cities with no other purpose than to look at a particular building, to contemplate its makeup, how it was put together, how it was assembled, how it worked, both inside and outside. When one day here in Berlin, I casually asked Haroon what the connection might be between, on the one hand, his great interest in buildings, in architecture, and on the other hand, his developed practice of filmmaking, he told me that, yeah, films are put together like buildings, assembled piece by piece, shot by shot, image by image, and experienced subjectively in time and space as more than the sum of their parts. I never looked at his films the same way again. Brick by brick, shot by shot, image by image, put together in such a way that the individual elements disappear into the living sense of the whole that moves in time and space. But of course, what's striking is that this metaphor, on the surface at least, seems to be way too analytic. It's more than just still shots or images that make up a film. In cinema, the shots or the images move. As Sergei Eisenstein once put it, first the movement, then what moves. The essence of film, it seems, is movement, shots of movement. Movement is not only the core of film, but also its magic. It's what has mesmerized the film spectator from the very beginning of the medium. For the movement captured by the apparatus of cinema, let me go back to this here. The movement captured by the apparatus of cinema is something that the human eye cannot comprehend. Key this. The movement captured by the apparatus of cinema is something that the human eye cannot comprehend analytically. It's inaccessible to the naked eye and can only be comprehended synthetically in time. The apparatus of the human eye blurs spatial-temporal interaction rather than centering or focusing on individual still shots or of objects or bodies moving through space. This, of course, leads directly to the question of which model of vision one believes to be the most accurate, the one that maintains that perception is the result of vision alone, with the eye as the all-seeing master, or the other that claims that perception is partly informed by vision and partly informed by knowledge, a necessary combination of the two. This latter view radically reduces vision from its traditional status as a privileged form to a relatively minor factor by comparison to the various other elements involved in perception. The question of whether what the eye sees is sufficient, or whether what the mind can record and science can improve on is integral to the representation of experience, remains one of the most crucial questions related to the technique of vision. It's a question that in many ways came to a head in the 1920s when the photography and film debates in the Soviet Union and in Weimar Germany around the journal New Left and what was then referred to as the New Vision tried to come to terms with the extraordinary breakthrough that these technologies achieved by extending the human eye. The camera in this context came to be seen as a prosthetic device that helps to overcome the natural limitations of the eye. The naked eye, and human vision more generally, was seen to be profoundly insufficient, inaccurate, lethargic even. It was considered incapable of producing actual records of temporal, spatial structures, and that model would lead to a type of structural image making, a type of image making that was extremely dependent upon the inherent technology of camera culture, extremely dependent upon the self-reflexive dimension of the photographic or cinematographic apparatus and procedure. Now, in opposition to this, and this is an opposition that in historical terms continues well into the 20th century, there was a more conservative model, the model that maintains that only data that the human eye can see is recorded by the photographic or cinematographic apparatus. This led in turn, in the interwar period, to a profound discrepancy between Neuzeitlichkeit photographers and filmmakers and modernist photographers and filmmakers, both in Weimar Germany and in the Soviet Union, where the presence of the object, the presence of the static object in space, could no longer be considered as the proper project for film or photographic production. And what replaces it is, ironically, the production of a new vision of someone like Moholy Nagy, on the one hand, and the model of seriality, or of the archive, as what Alexander Rodchenko would call the film or photophile, on the other. So one of the aspects that the motion picture introduces is precisely the dimension of structural seriality. The notion of the motion picture dismantles the idea of the single image as an adequate correlative of positive and visual experience. It dismantles the model of iconic resemblance as sufficient information about nature or about objective conditions of reality. It dismantles cinema or photography's innermost promise, namely to give an exact recording of surfaces and light, by focusing instead on structure and procedure, which of course goes against the very realist promises of positivism, which theorized photography and early cinema as technologies that could provide the most accurate representation of empirical models of experience. So the very notion that movement is the essence of cinema introduces a whole range of crucial transformations that have extraordinary consequences for the development of theorizations of vision and for the development of representation in the past century at large. And to repeat, it's a breakdown that first of all stresses structure over appearance, secondly foregrounds seriality over singular representations, and thirdly emphasizes temporality over static imagery. But where does this leave the shot-by-shot, image-by-image metaphor that Haroon used to relate architecture to cinema and with which I began my comments? To get at this, I think it's important to focus for a moment on the question of the lingering nature or fundamental delay of images. Allow me to do that now. In general terms, the persistence of vision, together with the eye's anticipation of the next phase of movement in the developing sequence or pattern, seems to be exactly what generates the experience of movement and of time and space. It's not the breakdown of the actually traceable set and stage of the performance of movement of an object or body in space that the eye observes, but the eye, due to its characteristic delay in perception, what we could call the after-image effect, that the eye at all times actually fuses multiple images, rather than focus on single images or sequences broken down into minute elements. So the eye, in effect, produces a continuous synthesis of an image that by the time it hits the retina is already in the past, as much as it anticipates the next phase of movement. And it's this production of the persistence of imagery, this superimposition of past, present, and future image data that generates the experience of movement. So what we're confronting is an opposition of what one could call vision as perceived is in analytic terms and vision as perceived in synthetic terms. Namely, you could say that the model that considers the film experience to be constituted by the reception of a series of distinct images or sequences can be criticized for the analytic nature of its assessment, for the anorganic vision that it avows, for breaking down the experience of vision into quantified and quantifiable single units, recorded, petrified, arrested shots or images that fail to convey an understanding of the sense of movement altogether. The other model of vision, the synthetic model, is infinitely more complex and fundamentally critical of the first. In philosophical terms, this model criticizes the legacy of the empiricist positivist approach to representation, if not the empiricist positivist approaches to science at large. It certainly criticizes the idea that verifiable phenomena could lay claim to an accurate representation of experience. So what emerges with the development of this synthetic model of vision is in fact a massive critique of positivist empiricism. It's a model of experience that emphasizes on almost every level the exact opposite of what positivism had claimed. It's a model that states that movement is at the foundation of experience, that continuous movement, continuous constellations, reconfigurations, are in fact the core of experience, the core of objects, and that any scientific approach that tries to arrest the dynamic process of life is in and of itself flawed by the very fact that it conceives of life or it constructs life in arrested units. It's a model that states that the object that becomes the focus of analysis, the object that becomes the focus of scientific investigation, is necessarily flawed because in its very conception as an object, it's already deprived of its internal dynamic fluidity and processual quality. And in that sense, the model of vision that is in many ways introduced by the development of the motion picture techniques is at the very opposite end of concepts of the single object or image, inasmuch as cinema vision emphasizes precisely the necessity to produce a model of continuity, to produce a dynamic model of continuous change, rather than of individual arrested analytical depiction. Clearly, in the project of cinema, what emerges is a rather drastic and different approach to conceptions of subjective experience, as much as a rather drastically and radically different approach to conceptions of temporal and spatial experiences as well. It's in fact with cinema that we could say that the pervasive presence of empiricism that characterized so much 19th and 20th century thought comes to a historical halt, to a historical arrest, and we witness the emergence of a different model of time, a different model of subjective experience, insofar as it could be conceived of under the rubric of subjective time. And from this perspective, we can begin to see what Haroun might have meant when he said that films are put together like buildings, assembled piece by piece, brick by brick, image by image, but also what he meant when he said that, like buildings, films are experienced subjectively in time, as more than the sum of their parts. When looking at a building, as when looking at a film, the individual elements soon disappear into the living sense of the whole, which in turn moves in space and time, and in the process, recursively constructs the very subject that is doing the looking. And that's one of the things that I learned from Haroun Farooqi. Thank you.